Lincoln. I pretend to do horticulture in Fond du Lac County, and I'll be hosting the program this morning. So I guess we'll start off with the always popular county roll call here. Let's see who's on from the Southwest. And apparently nobody. So let's go Northwest. Again, apparently nobody. North Central?
This is Sophie from Portage.
Nice. We got somebody. All right.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can.
Hi, this is Christelle.
Okay.
Do I need to introduce myself? I'm the fruit crop entomologist in Madison.
Oh, okay. Well, good to have you. Good to have you aboard.
Thank you.
We'll have time here for specialist reports, and be sure to jump in.
Sure.
East Metro.
Kim from Winnebago.
Scott, BJ from Brown County.
We had BJ, and who was the other one?
Scott Kim. Royce up in Marinette.
Oh, okay. And has anybody else jumped on since we started this?
Yep, George Kep from Columbia is here.
Hey, George.
Heidi Mike. From St. Croix County here.
Me from Kenosha County.
All right, let's get into county reports. And again, we'll why don't we start in the Southwest again? So jump in, give your reports, and we'll move around the state.
Well, Columbia County, some southern parts of the county did get some rain last weekend a bit. Center to the northern side, not so much. So it's been gorgeous, beautiful weather, but some of our crops and lawns and trees and plantings out there do need a pretty good drink of water on the central to the northern part of Columbia.
Anybody else in the Southwest? How about Northwest?
This is Heidi up in St. Croix County.
What's going on?
Pretty quiet week. The phone hasn't rung much. I got a few inquiries about people wanting to start businesses or just moving out into the area and wondering about zoning, planning, and business startup stuff. So that's kind of good. But other than that, not too much insect issues. I just sent some pictures to Phil last night of someone, an ash tree that's in decline, or actually a couple of them, with some suspect holes on the trunk. So I'm hoping we don't have the ash borer in our county yet, but I'm guessing we probably do.
All right. Anyone else in the Northwest? About North Central?
This is Sophie in Portage. We've had a relatively quiet week. We've had fairly dry weather. We need some rain. Our roadsides are blooming in mullein and goldenrod. And in town, we see the peroxia and limelight hydrangea blooming. And we've had fungal diseases, plant ID, and insect ID, obviously. And that's it.
Okay. Thank you. East Metro.
This is BJ from Brown County here. It's been pretty dry in Green Bay area for the past 1 week. But it's been cool too. The night temperatures sometimes have even dropped to 50 degrees actually. And we also had an incidence of late blight last week, and people are inquiring more about the late blight, whether to spray or not for it. We also had an incidence of downy mildew on inpatients last Monday, and a sample was sent to Brian for confirming it. Due to the cooler weather, some of the purples are not coloring up really well. We are seeing some kind of purple color pigmentations on the skins of the fruit, and people are inquiring about those things too. The Japanese beetle population is tapering down, and we had some inquiries on bed bugs, and chlorosis on oaks and birch has been very common these weeks, and some few plant ID questions. That's pretty much about it.
So a lot of green tomatoes?
The simple answer would be yes, I'm sure.
They're not maturing yet.
Yeah.
The same tomatoes have been green for like a month and a half.
Yeah, I've been saying up here that if we don't get some heat, everybody in Marinette, Ocano, and Florence counties is going to be sick of fried green tomatoes by the time November rolls around. But on the north side of Green Bay, I'll trump VJ's 50s with 35. which is what Florence County got down to the other night, and some other areas in northern Marinette and up in Forest, et cetera, counties. I'm sure Vilas, Oneida, et cetera, were in that realm as well. Basically, all of Marinette County except right along the bay was down into the 30s. We had 39, 38, you know, that kind of range. So a little bit chilly for early August. But because of the cool temperatures, the dryness hasn't been as bad because we just haven't had as much evapotranspiration. Could use some rain as just about everybody else, but we're holding our own so far. Diseases and insects are pretty much commonplace stuff. We're behind, of course, because of the lack of growing degree days on native plant flowering and perennial plant flowering and all that kind of stuff. But probably the only really noteworthy things are the amounts of certain insects and the lack of other insects, in that lack of pollinators, lack of butterfly species, lack of some of the moth species, but higher amounts of aphids than normal, you know, seeing some miscellaneous things that getting brought in that don't normally get brought in, but other than that, relatively normal.
Okay, others in the East Metro?
This is Kim with Winnebago County. I can echo a lot of what VJ and Scott were saying. Our nighttime temps have been probably in the mid to high 40s in a lot of areas. It is relatively dry. Some areas of in the north section of the county did get caught by the storms that went through the Appleton-Allegheny area. So some of them are doing storm cleanup. The calls are still coming in steady, but they're across the board. We did get several on crabapple scab and some other issues, lots of ID of weeds and some other things. Probably the big news for our county is that we were quarantined last week for EAB, and then I think it was actually yesterday we were able to do the official confirmation of an additional town in the county that has emerald ash borer. However, because local newspapers have not done an article yet, the calls for it are, we really haven't had any, but I anticipate when an article goes out next week that our calls for EEB will step up.
Surprised the newspapers haven't jumped on it yet.
I think partly the Post Crescent didn't jump on it because it was the same time the storms hit the Fox Valley, and then the Oshkosh paper was running all the stuff dealing with our county fair, and the newspaper right now has been interviewing both UW Extension and DNR employees about the find, and we're supposed to go out today for a photo shoot, and that got canceled and will be redone on Monday. So I anticipate after that the article will go out.
All right, thank you. Others in the East Metro? Apparently not. Here in Fond du Lac, you know, it's that season where you basically want to keep your doors locked on your car, otherwise somebody will drop a zucchini in the back seat. But other than that, pretty much the same as what others talk about. All right, specialist reports. Not sure who's on or who wants to go first, but I'll let someone jump in.
Crystal, did you want to make some comments?
I didn't really have a comment. I just wanted to know if anybody in Marinette and all those counties that just reported, so mainly Marinette, Winnebago, Fond du Lac, and Brown, that I know you guys are here, if you have any reports of spiderwing Drosophila.
I haven't seen any out at Harmony. Linda has been watching for them and all the raspberries, and she's the one who found them last year, so she knows what she's looking for.
Yeah.
So that's all I can say.
And those are counties that had either confirmed or suspected report last year. And I have a couple more. I also have Wapaka, Portage. Actually, Portage, you're here too, huh? And Richland that reported last year, and I don't have any reports yet this year, so I just wanted to be able to update people with the information on our website if you have any new sightings or anything. So
I'm kind of surprised about it too, and since last year we had a client brought in on a raspberries here in Green Bay, and this year we haven't found or known any case yet so far.
Okay, because we're covering like pretty much all the southern part, the western part of the state, but we also have reports in Bayfield, and not just a little. Bayfield has some. Washburn is barely now reporting some. Bedore County has them. Marathon County. So I'm surprised that we're not getting any report from those counties that I just mentioned. But it's probably just a question of time, obviously. So if you just keep me posted, that would be great. So I can update that and inform people in our newsletter and all those berry growers and all that so they know when it's coming to their counties. So.
Okay.
Phil, are you on?
Yep, Phil's here.
Go ahead.
So the two biggies from this week is people's homes are getting invaded by strawberry root weevil. Those are those little black, slow-moving, non-flying creatures. And for whatever reason, I have continued to get bird mite samples coming in. In some cases, people know they're getting bit from them. Other cases, people don't, and I'm not quite sure. I mean, not that I don't see that, but for it to be as intense and going ongoing for the last 2.5 months, I'm a little perplexed at that. Other than that, ants are starting to swarm, you know, spiders, those kind of things, but really nothing of major consequence other than, you know, Christelle's fruit fly. But other things seem to be kind of behaving. I will say I have started to see a kick up of butterflies. I was out in the field on Wednesday and did see at least enough diversity, so they will be making their comeback. So any questions?
Phil, I'm just wondering if it's a good thing that now you call it the Christelle's fly.
Well, we all get identified by plagues, unfortunately.
That's actually not so bad. Phil is always referring to my diseases, which is not very flattering sometimes.
All right.
Well, I'll jump in as there don't seem to be a lot of questions for Phil. We've seen a variety of things in the clinic this week. Vascular wilts are still quite active. More verticillium showing up both on ash and magnolia this week. We also have seen some oak wilt and then a variety of leaf diseases on oaks as well. Interesting sample on sugar maple came in with something called steganosporium canker. It's a very opportunistic canker disease, usually in trees that are under a lot of stress, but it's very visible. If you ever get branches of maple with these huge fruiting bodies that are very powdery, that you can rub spores off, kind of dark brown spores, you may be dealing with that. It's not the primary problem, but it's quite visual, and people oftentimes pick up on that. In terms of fruit crops, which is kind of the subject for today, some root and crown rot problems on apple and raspberry. Surprise, surprise, it's not atypical of what I see on those crops. And then on grapes, downy mildew and powdery mildew, had a sample of that come in, and I think there's quite a bit of downy mildew going on. Vegetable crops, we had a bevy of vegetables come in from the southwest with a variety of things. The chard that was brought in had Cercospora leaf spot. If you ever see very, very discrete circular lesions with kind of more light-colored centers and dark borders, it could very well be this particular disease. It's one of a bevy of foliar fungal diseases that will attack vegetable crops. And then we saw some alternaria leaf spot on both kale and okra, black rot on kale, blossom end rot on peppers, not surprising, and then also had some late blight on both potato and tomato this week, also septoria leaf spot and early blight, both, and again, not a surprise, those have been quite active. The most interesting samples this week were probably on the herbaceous ornamentals. We had a black-eyed Susan come in with brown leaves, that's septoria leaf spot. If you see kind of angular brown lesions on a rudbeckia, definitely think septoria. That's a very common leaf disease. It's basically a variation of the disease that we see on tomato. We had impatiens come in with downy mildew. VJ mentioned that, but we also had samples from Clark and I guess VJ, the Kewaunee County would have been the one that you submitted. And then we had a sample come in out of northern Illinois of an anemone. It had very interesting mosaic sorts of symptoms. But as it turned out, my first thought was possibly virus, but then as I looked a little bit more carefully, a lot of those little angular spots in the leaves were starting to turn necrotic, and sure enough, when I dug into that tissue, we had foliar nematode. So if you're dealing with broadleaf plants and you find angular leaf spots with necrosis, the tissue will actually die, usually lacking any sort of halo, you may be dealing with a foliar nematode problem. And then the other place to watch for foliar nematode, if you're not dealing with broadleafs, is on hosta, where the nematode actually makes necrotic or dead streaks down the length of the leaf. So it's been an interesting week this week in the clinic. Any questions?
Brian, I have a question. This is Kim.
Yeah, hi, Kim.
I got an email this morning from a resident. She didn't include any pictures, but she thinks her roses have the rose rosette disease.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, don't know anything about it and didn't know if he had any advice. She said she pruned them back after the first flush of blooms in June.
Okay.
And now she's experiencing very red, almost purple stem growth.
Yeah.
And she did disinfect between the shrubs and, the new growth on some of them is shockingly red and thorny, but not the witch's broom found in some pictures that she's seen.
Yeah, we usually do see some brooming with that. The red stems can be indicative, although I would hold off and watch for other symptoms. Eventually, if that is what it is, it will cause a decline in the shrub, and I would expect eventual plant death. And remind me, Phil, what's the vector on that particular organism?
There's a little aerified mite, but the trouble is it can come in ungrafted material. So, you know, as far as I'm aware of, we haven't seen the mites up that far. They're more in the southwest part of the state. So it would be more inclined to believe this came from the nursery, indeed, if it was rosette disease.
But I would hold off. I would look for the brooming, because that's a very distinctive symptom. The other thing that I've heard of in association with that particular disease is that you get thorny canes, but the thorns are very pliant and aren't real sharp. So that would be something else. But I would hold off on that actually doing anything, I think, at this point, to see whether the plants rebloom and whether you see any evidence of the brooming.
And she also asked, would treating it with any systemics help?
No. I don't know of any treatment for that particular disease. It's considered a viral disease.
Right. Okay.
Although I'm holding out that it might be a phytoplasma sooner or later, but based on the symptoms. But at this point, it's considered viral.
Okay. And can you test for it if she wants them tested?
We usually do it by visual symptoms. So this is Phil and I huddle over a broomed, purple-looking canes, and we say, yep, it looks like rose rosette.
So if I sent you pictures, would that be enough?
Yeah, go ahead and send some photos.
If I can get them from her, I will. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anything else for me?
Any other questions?
One question for Brian. This is Heidi. I'm in St. Croix County. I have a person in a condo association with a tree that's in decline, an ash tree, and Phil suggests I send you some samples. What kind of samples do you need from that leaf?
What I would look for would be branches where the leaves are turning yellow or browning, or where the branches have recently totally died back. And go for ones that are as low in the tree as possible. I want to test for verticillium.
Okay.
And so I need branches that are low on the tree, and three branches, at least a half an inch in diameter. You know, a half an inch to an inch is pretty optimal for us for testing. And then at least 6 inches long. If you harvest a larger branch and need to chop it into bits to get it in a box, kind of tape or rubber band all the bits from a given branch together so I know which pieces go with which branch. So we like to test three separate branches.
Okay.
And then
regular mail.
Regular mail is fine, but I would collect it next week and mail it early.
Okay.
If it's positive, we usually know after about 3 or 4 days.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Hey, any other questions? If not, we'll move in with our special guest segment. Brian, are you on?
Yes, I am.
Great. Brian Smith from UW River Falls, our fruit guy, and he's going to give us a little update on the fruit crop status. So, Brian, it's all yours.
You know what? I'm going to just kind of talk a little bit about the status of the industry in general, and then I hopefully will maybe have a little bit of time to talk about some of the research going on here at UW River Falls. The Wisconsin fruit industry is really very viable, and I've got some good figures here. The Wisconsin fruit and nut crops are worth about $228 million, and they represent about 1.9% of the total state ag. But if you look at individual crops, Of course, cranberries is number one, worth of approximately $195 million. Apples are 12th in the nation and represent 18 million, close to 19 million. Strawberries were considered sixth in the nation with about 600 acres, and that's about 6.4 million. And then tart cherries, 1.9 million. And there aren't a lot of stats out there, recent stats, but of course since I do some plum breeding, I had to mention we're, I believe 16th of the nation in plum production. The, little bit, that I see going on with the emerging trends, the, raspberries and brambles in general, acreage is small, but the markets are really pretty good. There's, considerable interest in high tunnels to extend the season, and a few growers are trying some of the Arkansas primacane fruiting blackberries, and those are not winter hardy outside, but if they've got a little bit of production, hopefully they won't kill the entire crown. If they're in a good area, they should survive the winter and be able to be used for high tunnel. Cranberries, acreage is stabilizing, and as are the prices. We see more upland production as far as compared to bogs, and new products are coming out all the time. Apples, the acreage is down about a quarter since 2007, but the yield per acre is rising. We've got a lot of good high-density orchards going in, and vertical axe, slender spindle, high tech, those training systems are contributing to that. There are lots of good rootstocks coming out. Not only, you know, the number one we've had in the past, you know, we've had Budogoski 9 or Bud 9, but there are Geneva rootstocks that are being trialed, and hopefully we'll have more information on those as to how far we can press them into the north. Strawberries, the acreage is stabilizing, as is yield. And again, there's more interest in high tunnels and want to find new cultivars for matted row, and there's quite a few being released. Fair number from Europe, at least through some of our bigger strawberry nurseries, and those need to be tested thoroughly before we can really recommend them. And blueberries, there's real large interest in blueberries, and both high bush and half highs. And even though I'm somewhat skeptical about blueberries, the half highs should be good in a protected location. The high bush have done amazingly well in protected locations. I never expected that, but we do have some fine examples out there in the state. Great. There's a tremendous amount of interest, as most of you realize. Even though we have a poor climate for grapes, nice to have the U of M next door that's providing some new cultivars that seem to be doing extremely well. And there are people starting up wineries and going either wholesale and or retail. Amazing to see that kind of activity. Even in my back door here, there's some major wineries going up. One crop that some of you have probably heard about, aronia berry, and that is actually a small pom fruit, and it's native to the Great Lakes area. It, I've taken kind of a role in that area of aronia research by doing some breeding. But the aronia berries became a commercial crop, actually not here, but over in Europe, in Poland and Germany. And we believe that there was some actual interspecific, intergeneric hybridization with pear at one point in time to make them larger. And now we have aronia cultivars Viking and Nero that are actually being planted on quite large acreages. There's one grower that has 40 acres of aronia, and they're looking at, of course, commercial or mechanical harvesting with blueberry harvesters. If you've ever harvested aronia by hand, you know 40 acres is not going to quite do it by hand. Let's see here. tell you a little bit more about research at UW River Falls. We've got we've been working on fruit breeding primarily for the last 26 years, and our main objectives are developing new strawberry cultivars and also testing commercial strawberry cultivars. We have approximately 70 genotypes that we're testing in a replicated trial, and then we make recommendations to commercial growers based on what we see here. And even though it's a, you know, each grower is a case-by-case basis, we found that most of our results compare quite well to what growers see across the state. So we do strawberry breeding and cultivar development, commercial performance trials. We do plum and apricot breeding, and most of that is interspecific hybridization. I develop plum cots and apriums. Plum cots are half plum, half apricot, and the apriums are three-quarter apricot, one-quarter plum, and pluots are three-quarter plum, one-quarter apricot. And then we, so we have about an acre and a half of strawberry seedlings, about 2,500 seedlings this year, from 60 different parental crosses. And, we have about probably 3 acres of plum apricot seedlings planted out. We planted out our first, 354 seedlings of the first Aronia breeding program in the Midwest. There's only one other one in the United States. And we also have a very small, but have a lot of opportunities looking at developing some dessert grapes. So my first seedlings were started about 3 years ago. We also have a lot of cooperative research going on with the Canadians. And we also look at Iowa State University and University of Minnesota doing a fair amount of evaluation on various fruits that are selections from our breeding program. In general, I thought I'd talk a little bit about what I'm seeing in fruit crops and what I think is important at this point in time in the year. The grapes are certainly not responding the best to our cool season. More heat, the better for those poor guys. But leaf pulling should be just about finished because we want to do that before Verizon or berry color up. And that leaf pulling is done on the shaded side of the vines just to increase air movement and spray penetration. And we like to use that to help get more color up and maybe some higher sugars in red wine grapes. We are also concerned about the possibility of spotted wing Drosophila. And it would appear that Vanitol, Delegate, and Entrust are some of the better ones. And I'm glad Christelle's on here because she can make plenty of comments along the way with SWD.
Yep.
The other thing that has been a large problem in the past and it continues to be periodically multicolored Asian lady beetles, they really cannot penetrate the fruits of grapes, but, you know, if there's been any bird activity or cracking of the grapes due to this general high fluctuation in temperature and environmental conditions, like on bluebell grape, that would be a typical problem with having multicolored Asian lady beetles. And Belay, Venom, and Scorpion are some of the insecticides used for controlling that. Those of you that are not aware, there's definitely gives an off flavor to wine if you have Asian lady beetles in that mix, so to speak, and it has to be all thrown out. So definitely a quality concern there, and really have to start scouting the vineyard before anything gets ripe. There's not much ripe yet, but there's a few grapes at Verizon right now. The Aronia are definitely turning color. Some of them are black already, and those are actually going to be harvested a little bit late, as is most our most fruit crops, just because of the lack of heat units. But we've got more and more growers that are looking at co-op harvesting, buying one harvester and sharing them among three or four growers. In apples, the one thing I would first say is somebody had suggested that I do Apple ID. Yes, I do. I've gotten quite a bit of people, both individuals and agents, sending me information about apples that they'd like to have ID for their clients. And it's rather an interesting thing. I teach in a lab on Apple ID for my advanced fruit class. And there are so many things that we can look at, from bark color to bud size and pubescence to leaf shape and serration, along with bloom time and winter hardiness and uses. But what it really comes down to is that leaves and stems are really not going to help much. It's the good old-fashioned, just the fruit when it's ripe is going to be the best thing for me to look at. And, of course, tasting is going to help tremendously to narrow things down, as is the season. And, you know what, I do an even better job when there's apple pie involved. So the apples are usually, I've gotten some people sent in requests for IDs, and they said they bought them at, like, Kmart or Walmart or some other place, and that makes it a little bit more difficult sometimes to narrow things down, because they have a more general number of varieties that they bring in that's standard for all their stores. So sometimes it's rather hard to narrow things down when it's from a store like that originally. I would say that it's always good to know the age of the tree and its cropping history. You know, if we've got those that are annual croppers versus biennial croppers, those that are on a rootstock, those that might have been actually planted from seed instead of actually bought as a tree. So there's lots of things to investigate to add to the situation when we're looking at Apple ID. Some other things I look at in apples right now, the retain is one of the chemicals we use to help prevent premature drop on the fruit. And that should go on about 4 weeks prior to the optimum harvest date. And that harvest date is going to change quite a bit depending on our weather. I know it's supposed to turn hot now, get up in the 90s this week. So that's going to be a difficult change for a lot of these fruit crops. But something like Macintosh, which drop, if you even look at them, you're going to definitely want to put on retain. And it will not work, though, unless you use a silicone-based spreader sticker like Stylewet L77. The other thing that I see with apples and all the other fruit crops together, this is critical. It's dry over most of the state. I don't care whether you got young trees or bearing trees. If you got the opportunity, have the opportunity to water, do so. They need a lot of water. Watering helps retain nutrition availability. It helps those trees ripen their crop. It helps those trees be in good condition going into the winter. I can't tell you how many fruit trees I've seen lost that have been traced back to just lack of watering during the growing season. And then when they go into the winter in a weakened condition, they will not survive, a lot of them. Strawberries, this is getting into the time where we can start thinking about fertilizing June-bearing strawberries because they are making their flower buds for this next year's crop, starting about the middle of August all the way up till when the temperatures get below about 45 degrees in the fall. So the longer we have cooler, mild weather, the better for strawberries, but they do require fertilizer, and that would be primarily nitrogen, and ammonium sulfate or ammonium nitrate or urea formaldehyde 4500 would work just fine. On a heavier soil, I would probably wait until about the 25th of August to put on one application. But those growers with, and you know, this all works for homeowners too. Those that have a sandier soil, I like to see a split application about the 20th of August, and the 20th of September. There's a lot of weeds that are coming on right now, and we'll have a huge flush near the end of August into September for the fall and winter annuals. So herbicides are a must at this time of year. Plenty to choose from. In raspberries, I hate to, actually overlap on what's already been said or in anybody else's expertise, but some of the things that we worry about at this time of year is orange rust and raspberry leaf spot and septoria, and those take a huge toll on raspberries, weakening them and causing massive winter injuries. So orange rust, Rally, Orbit, Cabrillo, and Pristine work quite well. And for, there's others out there, too, that will work on that and raspberry leaf spot or septoria leaf spot. So the raspberries are really important, too, to be monitoring for the fall crop or for spotted wing Drosophila. The other kind of interesting observation that I've seen over the years is that there's becoming more interest even in fruit crops in transgenics, and they're the first transgenic apples are out there. They're called the Arctic series, and basically what this Okanagan specialty fruit is doing is just taking standard varieties, and then they are silencing the polyphenol oxidase gene, PPO gene, that is going to prevent browning. Now, that's quite a neat trick. It's not that important a trait, so nobody's gotten all that excited about it, but they're marketing them as the Arctic series, Arctic Granny, Arctic Golden. A few other things that you should be aware of with apple cultivars. There's many new ones coming out that are just from traditional types of breeding. Evercrisp is a from the Midwest Apple Improvement Association. It's a Fuji by Honeycrisp. And then a very unique one that I'm sure will gain some renown is a red sport of Honeycrisp. It's called Royal Red, and Willow Drive Nursery, they're actually the nursery that propagates all my advanced selections from the stone fruit breeding, are going to be distributing, propagating that. The other two that it looks like they're fairly late, I know Wine Crisp has been given some publicity, but it's 2 weeks later than Delicious, so that's kind of out for Wisconsin in most areas. And Crimson Crisp, Co-op 34, is from the Purdue program for disease resistance. However, it's got some major disease as far as, I think it's got cedar apple rust, if I remember right, but it's got some disease resistance other than that. And again, it seemed like it was fairly late. Some of the other things I was going to mention, I'd forgotten when we were talking about research before. I also, one of my favorite areas of research is looking at new crops. You know, the Aronia is one, but there's some other ones, native fruit crops that I have about an acre and a half of, and those are Western Sand Cherry, Eastern Sand Cherry. They're hardy to 40, 50 below zero, and will tolerate 10 inches of annual rainfall. And this was a good summer, and last summer was a good summer to test those. They've never been watered, and they've got a good crop of fruit on them, and they're on pure sand soil. The other one is Beach Plum. That is actually a cottage industry out on the East Coast, and that is an interesting crop for here. It's not quite as winter hardy as I expected, but once they get established, they seem to be doing pretty well. They've got a full crop of fruit on them, but they won't be probably ripe for another month. But they make jam, syrups, jellies, wine, all kinds of things out of these different fruit crops that may have some benefit in the future with things looking quite extreme for weather the last couple of years, and certainly continuing on to be even worse predicted for the coming time. So I will leave it open for some questions here, and feel free to ask me anything about fruit crops.
Well, does anybody have some questions for Brian? There's a lot to digest there. You say that the apple acreage has decreased by 25% over the past 5 or 6 years?
Yes.
And what's the reason for that?
Well, the reason is that they are becoming so much more efficient. All the older orchards are being pulled out in blocks and then replanted with dwarf orchards. And, you know, if you do a comparison, the standard spacing at 25 by 25 or 20 by 20 was 70 trees per acre, and you could maybe expect 300 bushels per acre. Now you're looking at 300 to 1,200, even 1,500 trees per acre and 1,200 bushels per acre. So acreage is down, but production is even, if not going up a little bit.
All right. So similar deal to the dairy industry, if you can.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it's amazing. You know, a lot of it, too, is because of the winter hardy rootstocks that are also very dwarfing. They're as dwarfing as Mulling 9, and that has really been a major factor.
Other questions for Brian? Well, we really appreciate the insight here. Again, a lot of great information. I know I learned a lot. Appreciate your time coming on this morning, Brian.
Sure thing. Appreciate it.
Open question and answer period. Anything that hasn't got covered here this morning that somebody would like to bring up at this time or anybody?
Just a quick question on some of this verticillium that's found in these ash trees, especially older ash. Will those come back next year, or are we looking at just a dead tree?
I usually consider verticillium pretty fatal, at least long-term, and it can oftentimes be fatal very, very quickly. So sometimes we do see some recovery in trees, but I think that's relatively uncommon.
Okay, I saw a tree yesterday is probably 50 years old, and two trees planted at the same time, and one is looking pretty ugly, and the other one looking just fine right next to it.
Yeah, that could very well be, and it might not be verticillium, but that would be something I would suggest testing for in that particular situation, and we see that sort of phenomenon all the time. Verticillium is very patchy in the soil, so the way I interpret what's going on is it just depends upon whether the root system of a particular tree happens to grow through an area where there's verticillium in the soil. And we do see very old trees sometimes that have looked healthy for years all of a sudden become diseased.
Okay.
So I
still gave these people some certified arborists to have them check it out, too, and see what they thought. So.
Right. There certainly are other things that can cause decline in ashes. So, you know, I would be aware of things like emerald ash borer. There's also ash yellows, which is a phytoplasma disease that will cause some dieback as well. So it's not necessarily always verticillium, but it's something to keep in mind for that particular tree.
Yeah, this was an entire tree was exhibiting this, was putting out little seed pods, and it was starting to look pretty ugly real fast.
Okay.
Anything else question-wise, comment? If not, has anybody got any announcements, programs, events coming up that they want to get out there?
Next week, both Brian and Phil will be up in Winnebago and Outagamie County doing workshops here on insects and diseases of trees and shrubs.
Okay. Anything else? Well, if not, we're nearing the end of the road here. I think next week I see Chrissy Wen from Walworth is the host and the special guest. Oh, Michelle Obama talking about the White House garden. You won't want to miss. You won't want to miss that. Just making that up. Actually, Gevins, vegetable harvest and post-harvest issues. So, if there's nothing else, thank everyone for being on. Thank Brian for his time and information. And I guess we'll see you next week.